podcast discusses exchange-traded options issued by the Options Clearing Corporation. Options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. Individuals should not enter into options transactions until they've read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics and risks of standardized options, available by calling 1-888-OPTIONS or by visiting www.optionseducation.org. None of the information in this presentation should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security or to provide investment advice.
Hi, my name is Bill Ryan. I'm a senior representative for the Options Clearing Corporation. I've been working with options for over 20 years. Some of you may recognize my voice from calling the 888 Options Help Desk. I'm here to present an on-demand podcast discussing how options are traded.
Welcome to the podcast on where and how options are traded, produced by the Options Industry Council. We have two goals today. First, we'll take a look at where and what options exchanges are, as well as some of the basic influences that routinely drive the market up and down. Second, we'll get into what you might do to get prepared to make a trade in terms of setting your expectations and the kind of strategies available that might suit those expectations. When we're finished with our discussion, I think you'll appreciate that both research and a sound opinion on an underlying stock is pretty crucial for success with your options trading. Financial markets have been around for centuries. The ancient Greeks and Romans even had them. Since then, buying and trading shares or part ownership in companies that produce goods and services has become an important way to generate capital that is vital in a growing economy, which today is becoming more and more global in scope. In the U.S., a stock market was first established shortly after the country was founded, where buyers and sellers could invest or simply speculate by exchanging cash for paper certificates or shares as we know them. Since then, numerous stock exchanges have been established with physical or bricks-and-mortar facilities throughout the country. With an expanding economy, have come more and more companies raising vital capital needed for growth by issuing shares. With more shares available for trading, more exchanges have been needed. In 1934, the U.S. Congress created the Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, to regulate and maintain investor confidence in the securities marketplace. The overall purpose of the SEC was to protect investors. Through oversight and regulation, it maintains fair, orderly, and efficient markets, which in turn serves to facilitate the formation of capital. What about derivative securities like options? These products, too, have been used in one form or another for centuries. What about derivative securities like options? These products, too, have been used in one form or another for centuries. For instance, in ancient Greece, olive growers used options to stabilize the income they received for their crops, and consumers used options to guarantee costs for olives needed for production of goods and services. Every time you eat an olive, you might remember that options played an economic role then and have continued to do so ever since. In the United States, options have existed for many years. However, in 1973, the first exchange in the world dedicated to trading options was established, the Chicago Board Options Exchange, commonly referred to as the CBOE. At that time, the trading of exchange-listed options contracts in the U.S. became regulated by the SEC and has remained so ever since. The first options traded on an options exchange were equity call options, with equity puts introduced several years later. Today, there are exchange-listed and traded options based not only on underlying stocks, like equity options, but also on a wide variety of instruments, like stock indexes, exchange-traded funds, U.S. Treasury rates, foreign currencies, and others. Since 1973, the listed options industry has grown by leaps and bounds. Today, there are six exchanges in the U.S. that trade options. They are the American Stock Exchange, the Boston Options Exchange, the Chicago Board Options Exchange, the International Securities Exchange, New York Stock Exchange ARCA Exchange, and the Philadelphia Stock Exchange. It should be pointed out that the name and number of exchanges can change due to mergers, acquisitions, but at the time of this writing, there are just 6 options exchanges. Options are now widely used as another tool in the portfolios of a large number of investors, individual investors, as well as institutions. Institutions? By these I mean mutual funds, pension funds, hedge funds, and other professionals managing large portfolios of stock and or cash. In fact, you might indirectly have option positions without even knowing it through your pension fund at work, or maybe even your insurance company uses them to help manage its assets and control risk. Let's take a look at these 6 U.S. exchanges that currently trade options. Each of them is registered with the SEC, but is authorized to regulate the conduct and trading activities of its own members through a set of rules that are approved by the SEC. Who are these members? They are persons registered and authorized by their exchanges to make transactions. They are the sellers for your buy orders and the buyers for your sell orders. These members may be trading calls and puts for their own account or potential profit, or functioning as brokers, executing buy or sell orders on behalf of others, including investors like you. What you may not know is that stock exchanges work the same way, with members who serve similar roles. As for the roles members can play on any option exchange or the rules that govern their activities, you might consult that specific exchange. So who determines the prices at which you buy and sell your equity option contracts? It's not the exchange itself, nor is there any individual who dictates the price at which an option is traded. Indeed, all transactions on U.S. options exchanges are made in what's called a competitive double auction market. For an option that you might want to trade, you can learn the current best bid and ask price for that contract either through your broker or on a variety of websites. These prices represent the best among all market participants, whether they are exchange members, institutions, or individual investors like you. This is the auction. Each participant competes with his or her best price, and this is public information. In the end, any transaction that is made at a price that's agreeable to both the buyer and the seller. Again, this is the way best bid and ask prices are determined in the stock market as well as the options market. As a final note on the exchanges themselves, let's consider bricks and mortar. Do option transactions have to occur physically in a building somewhere with market participants shouting out this price or that? Not any longer. Some exchanges are entirely electronic, but the competitive auction market still works the same way. It's just that the bid-ask prices are made and buyers and sellers matched up electronically through computers. A key benefit to this system is the speed at which transactions can be made. You might also receive confirmations that your option orders have been executed and the prices you paid or received electronically. This might be while logged onto your brokerage firm's website or possibly even by email. Other exchanges, on the other hand, maintain a physical trading floor in addition to an electronic market environment. On a trading floor, the competitive auction can occur via participants making their best bid or ask price and determining transaction prices verbally. This is called open outcry. When you see a clip on television of a marketplace in action, this is what you're seeing. Some brokerage firms might choose to represent certain option orders in this way, depending on an investor's preference, how complex the order might be, or maybe the number of contracts to be bought and sold. Today, however, a majority of orders from individual investors are handled quickly and efficiently through computers. If you don't already know, you might check with your broker to see how your orders will be executed and or which method might best serve your needs. Also, the time frame for option orders to reach an exchange for execution, as well as confirmations coming back, might vary among brokerage firms. You'll want to check with yours to see how its systems and procedures for these things work. Okay, so now you understand that all market participants play an important part in setting the prices at which options are eventually bought and sold. But what motivates investors to be willing to pay or receive more or less for an equity option? Ultimately, it's changing opinion on the underlying stock that drives its price up and down over time. Remember, equity options derive their value largely from the price of their underlying stocks. So let's briefly consider some of the motivations of stock investors. Many stock investors commonly consider a company's balance sheet, its end product or service, and its potential for growth and increased earnings. Even if they don't do this research themselves, there are plenty of analysts who do and give advice to buy, sell, or hold a company's shares. Changing opinions result in changing stock prices, but the financial performance of any corporation is also affected by the overall economy in which it operates, one that is becoming increasingly more global in scope and is completely dynamic. Its health changes, something we all feel the effects of every day. So the investing community as a whole watches for signs that indicate the economy may grow, retract, or possibly stabilize. The government continually monitors the state of the economy and applies tweaks in an attempt to adjust things like the overall money supply, the rate of inflation, and interest rates, all in an ongoing effort to grow the economy at what it considers a healthy pace. It does this in several ways, including adjusting taxes and through the Federal Open Market Committee, whose public actions can sometimes be very newsworthy events. The stock market is sensitive to interest rates. When corporate dividend yields decline, stock investors might turn to treasury bills or bonds if their current yields are more attractive. Moving money out of the stock market on a large scale to invest in bonds requires selling shares, which could lower stock prices. Eventually, a trend like this tends to reverse, and stock buyers will return to the markets and drive the price of shares up. The fluctuating market price of a commodity like oil has an obvious effect on investor sentiment about economic growth and hence the overall appeal of owning shares in corporations. As a result, things like the price of oil can, of course, impact the broad performance of the stock market. These days, we're all pretty familiar with this. The point of this simplistic economic and market overview is not that you need to become an economist. It's just that you need to be an informed investor. You need to stay current with the effects of changing economic indicators, like the government's Consumer Price Index, for instance, and understand what kinds of things affect the sentiments of stock investors and why. You should also appreciate the performance of various markets for things like stocks, bonds, and some commodities, like gold or oil, can be interrelated, even on a minute-to-minute basis and to varying degrees over time. Okay, so we're supposed to be talking about equity options. Well, we are. Again, they are derivative instruments, and their values are largely derived from the values or expected future values of the underlying stock. I can't repeat this enough. But since equity options give you the right to buy or sell stock at a specific price within a given future time frame, these values also reflect expected stock prices. Investors will often turn to equity options to profit from their opinions on the expected performance of underlying stocks or to protect shares they currently own. They might buy calls when they expect stock prices to increase, or buy puts when they expect stock values to drop. The stronger these opinions are, the more option buyers there might be. A function of supply and demand is that with more buyers, you'll generally see higher prices for options. The result is that you might often see prices for calls increase in advance of a rise in the underlying stock price, or puts increase in price before the underlying stock drops in value. So, whether you own a call or a put, an awareness of changing investor sentiment in the marketplace might help you to understand why your option is changing in price the way it is, which may be unexpected. This might also help you to decide to sell your option to either take a profit or cut a loss. Now, let's talk about buying an option on a particular stock. The first thing you need to decide is what your expectations are for the stock's price in the future. In other words, are you bullish and expect the price to go up, or bearish and expect it to go down? Whichever is the case, you should also have a target price in mind. How high do you think it will go, or how low? If the stock price moves as you expect, you could always profit on either opinion by investing in shares of the stock by going long or short. Options, however, offer you the opportunity to profit at a lower cost than taking a position in the stock itself and with limited risk. Another interesting feature of options is that you may also take advantage of an underlying stock that you don't expect to move very much over time. In other words, you might be neutral on that stock. Whatever your opinion on the stock's future price might be, it should be a well-researched opinion. Do your homework. Have a good reason to be bullish, bearish, or neutral. Don't just blindly make a guess. After all, when you make an investment such as buying a house, you would research that, wouldn't you? Sure you would. You'd investigate its fair market value by comparing its cost to surrounding houses, the features the houses offer, and the quality of its construction. But wouldn't you also be concerned about the potential for the house's value to increase in the future? You probably would. You'd consider the house's location, the changing nature of the neighborhood, or even the health of that town's economy. Forming an opinion on a stock before buying a call or put should be no different. Good research is the best starting point for any investment. An important feature of any options contract is that it eventually expires. This may be in a few months, or possibly a couple of years after you buy it. Given this, you should appreciate the importance of that time frame. In other words, how long do you think it will take the underlying stock to reach your expected target price? This is just as important as the target price itself. Give yourself enough time for the stock price to reach that target and select an expiration month accordingly. There should be plenty of expiration months to choose from, and more than likely, one fits your needs. If you have difficulty in making decisions about a stock's target price or the period of time it might take to reach that price, then you should probably talk with your broker for some advice. Again, before you actually buy a house, you'd certainly discuss every aspect of making a good purchase with your real estate broker. Okay, back to doing research on a stock before you decide you're bullish, bearish, or neutral. When we use the word research, we mean performing some degree of analysis of the stock's current price as opposed to what you think it should be either today or in the future. Investors might analyze a stock in one or more ways, so let's take a brief look at a few of these. First, there is what's called fundamental analysis. This involves a look at the company's balance sheet and income statement, its cash flow, its position in the market it serves, and the products or services it offers. Many investors will also consider what's called the stock's P/E ratio, or the ratio between its current price versus the company's per-share earnings of the stock. These are all good sound factors to look at in deciding whether you're bullish or bearish on any stock, and are widely considered by investors and professional stock analysts alike. When I spoke about doing research before buying a house, it is really this kind of fundamental research I was referring to. Another kind of analysis made by investors is called technical analysis. This involves a consideration of non-fundamental factors, such as the stock's price trend in the past. By looking at a stock's historical price chart, certain patterns are looked for, and projections might be made as to the direction the stock price might take, or a price level where it might reverse direction. These are commonly called support or resistance levels, which you might have read about or hear about from time to time. Another factor that's often used in technical analysis is trading volume, or the number of shares traded, and how that might imply an upcoming change in the stock price. A key premise of analyzing stock price technicals is that past trading patterns predict future ones. Sound technical analysis can be pretty complicated and generally calls for an investor keeping a close eye on the market on a daily or even hourly basis. Finally, there is market analysis, or considering potential changes in direction of the stock market as a whole, which can take an individual stock price along with it. This may involve looking at fundamental factors such as the P/E ratio of a broad market index, technical analysis of an index's price history, or even considering possible political or military events. Widely considered, however, are the economic reports routinely issued by the government that I spoke of earlier. These reports on such things as employment figures, inflation numbers, and how interest rates are being tweaked to improve general economic growth. Okay, now you understand a little bit more about what we call research. The types of analysis you might choose to make is entirely up to you, as is your source for this information, but this analysis will help you have a sound reason for being bullish or bearish. When developing your strategy, be sure to allow for exit points to take your profit if your strategy proved correct. As important, however, is having the discipline to see when your initial expectation of an underlying stock price direction proves wrong, and to cut a loss on a losing call or put purchase. Some investors have as much difficulty with this as deciding which call or put best serves their needs to begin with. Let's finish up this podcast with a look at the flexible roles options can play in your overall investment program. Once you've formed your opinion on an underlying stock, you'll have a wide variety of option strategies to choose from. Say you're bullish on an underlying stock and want to profit from an increase in its price. In this case, you might consider purchasing a call option. Buying a call is generally considered a very bullish strategy. You have unlimited profit potential because there is no theoretical limit as to how high that stock can rise. But if the stock does not reach your target price before it expires, it's possible you will lose your entire cost for the call before expiration. Given this possibility, say you are not totally confident the stock will go up, or you're only moderately bullish. There are option strategies called spreads, which you might consider. As a trade-off of a less initial cost, therefore less cash at risk if your bullish opinion is wrong, you will have limited profit potential if your opinion proves correct. Other strategies can fit different degrees to which you might be bullish with different risk-to-reward characteristics. The same thing applies to bearish opinions on an underlying stock. If you're very bearish, you might consider buying a put option. Your profit potential can be substantial if the stock goes down, but if it doesn't, or at least doesn't within your expected time frame, you can lose what you initially paid for the put. There are also spread strategies you might consider if you're only moderately bearish, with the same trade-off of a reduced risk for limited profit potential. Again, there are numerous other strategies that can fit different degrees to which you might be bearish and with varying levels of risk. Say you think a stock is poised to make a significant move, but are not sure whether that is up or down. Most of investors have felt this from time to time. There are option strategies that allow profiting when and if this up or down move takes place, the most common one called a straddle. But if you are only moderately convinced about a potential move in stock price, there are strategies you might consider that cost less but would result in less profit from the same change in underlying stock price. What if you have a neutral opinion on a stock or where you might expect little or no movement in its price? There are option strategies you might employ to profit if this proves true. Many of these are among the riskier strategies, and investors who use them generally use options that expire in relatively short time frames. Finally, many investors who do have experience with options don't realize the variety of strategies available that use options in combination with stock. These can be used to either generate income when owning shares or to protect their share value from a drop in price, or even to serve both of these purposes at the same time. See what I mean when I say options are flexible?
Please remember that OIC is here to provide fair and balanced information to help you learn and use options. Whenever you have options questions, please give OIC a call at 1-888-OPTIONS or visit optionseducation.org.